Illinois recently became the 20th state to legalize medical marijuana. Some in Iowa are pushing for a similar initiative. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we'll hear from Iowa patients and families, including an Iraq War veteran who believe cannabis can be an effective medicine. Also, two doctors on the benefits and concerns of using the drug as medicine. And we'll discuss the issue in the upcoming Iowa legislative session. The governor says he would veto any bill legalizing marijuana in any capacity. Join our discussion, medical marijuana, after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Illinois recently became the 20th state to legalize medical marijuana. Doctors can start prescribing medical marijuana in our neighbor state in January. Now, some in Iowa are pushing for a similar change in our laws. And later in this hour, we'll have two doctors on, two physicians to weigh in on the benefits and their concerns of using the drug as medicine. We'll also discuss the issue as it pertains to the upcoming Iowa legislative session. But before that, we want to start with some personal stories from Iowans who believe cannabis can be an effective medicine. We want to hear from you this hour as well. Do you think Iowa should join 20 other states in legalizing medical marijuana? Does cannabis help a medical condition you have? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining me, first of all, in the Iowa City studio, Logan Edwards with us, an Iowa Marine Corps veteran from Davenport. Logan Edwards, welcome to our program.
Hey, how are you doing?
And I understand you served in Iraq in a certain period during 2007 and 2008. What can you tell us about your tour of duty there?
It was long, boring, and I guess the best way to put it is it's comparable to sitting on the moon and watching the Earth spin. That's kind of how it felt to be there. I left life behind here in America, went to Iraq, and went through a series of changes and things over there that a lot of my generation and people back here in America didn't necessarily go through.
Mm-hmm. You saw combat over there?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
When did your symptoms of post-traumatic stress turn up? Were they first when you returned from Iraq to Iowa, in this case, to Davenport?
Yeah, the symptoms really started manifesting kind of at times when they were there. I had lots of anxiety and periods of depression and stuff while I was there. When I came back is when I really started to notice the anxiety, the panic attacks and things like that when I was in crowded places, driving, around lots of people, things like that. I noticed to have a lot of anxiety and problems sleeping as well.
Mm-hmm. So these would come on to on a daily basis?
Yeah. I mean, it was really unrelenting. I think back on it, and it really started like the moment we walked off the plane and the guys I was with for 8 months and we'd never left each other's sides, all of a sudden we're going home to their families and things. And that's kind of – I felt like an alone, feeling and an anxious feeling.
What are your thoughts when you were feeling that?
At first I thought it was just kind of a situational type thing that was going to go away eventually. Everything that I'd heard from, senior Marines as well as medical doctors and stuff was, hey, I was 20 years old. I just come back from a war zone and that, these were natural feelings and that they would go away after a period of time.
Mm-hmm. So you sought medical treatment. What kind of treatment did you get initially?
Well, at first when I first came back, nobody really told me I had a problem. I did what a lot of Marines do. I just kind of slipped into, the drinking and using that as kind of a way to numb my mind and kind of get the anxiety to just dissipate. After getting into some trouble with alcohol and realizing that was, not beneficial to me, and after, some coercion from some senior Marines, I decided to go to the VA and seek treatment, yes.
Mm-hmm. What did they prescribe or what did they diagnose you with?
at the time in 2008, PTSD wasn't as prevalent, I guess, as it is now. It wasn't talked about as much. They diagnosed me with anxiety and depression and insomnia at first. They gave me lots of different antidepressants and, you know, tranquilizer type benzodiazepines and things like that to calm me down. But as well as therapy, you know, talking to people and
cognitive therapy that you were on a regular basis.
We did a lot of work with that, and I really didn't see much improvement. And a lot of times the pharmaceutical drugs didn't agree with me, and I would get lots of side effects. And I've spent thousands of dollars in ER room visits in Davenport going to them after having adverse side effects and making my symptoms much worse.
Okay. So along comes cannabis. How did you hear about that? Also from your military buddies?
Well, what happened with it is I'd gotten to the point where literally I'd tried after 3 years of trying every treatment that I could through the VA. I got to be to the point of honestly contemplating suicide, as a lot of returning veterans, unfortunately, are doing.
Did you get past contemplating? Did you attempt?
I got past it. I mean, the reason that I held on was I just had a newborn daughter, and I really did not, you know, like the idea of my daughter growing up without a father. You know, one more victim, I guess, of this war. And my own stubbornness kind of led me, you know, I'm not going to give up yet. And I said, you know, I decided to give the VA one more chance, and I submitted myself to an inpatient program for 3 months with the VA that specialized, you know, specifically on veterans' mental issues. And I tried every pharmaceutical therapy they had under doctor's supervision, as well as, you know, emotional therapy and thing like that. After 3 months of it, my symptoms, you know, were no better than they were before. One thing that I'd noticed while I was in this treatment program was lots of Vietnam veterans that had been suffering for, you know, 40 years plus. They're in their 60s now, suffering from the same symptoms that I have. And it's at that point that I really started to realize maybe, you know, the treatments and the answers weren't going to be given to me by the VA. And so I started to look for alternatives. And that's when I realized, you know, veterans were having good success with treating a lot of these symptoms out in, you know, states that allowed it. And that's when I, you know, having no other options and basically feeling like nothing left to lose is when I started to use, you know, cannabis. And it did things for me immediately.
What for instance? What did it alleviate?
Well, from the minute – I mean, I used it by inhaling it. I didn't use it, you know, the oils or anything like that. I'd smoked it and
just standard cannabis that is available now legally in some states.
Correct. And from the minute I inhaled it, my anxiety dissipated. I mean, we're talking unrelenting anxiety that had been plaguing me for the past years. I tried so hard to get away from it. It helped that immediately. It helped me in ways also that I really can't describe, as far as allowing myself to, you know, mend relationships that I had destroyed after coming home from Iraq and kind of suffering through some of the, you know, anxieties and things I had put a real and you know, using the alcohol put a real strain on relationships I had. And when I used cannabis, it allowed me to treat the symptoms, get rid of the anxiety, help me sleep, as well as, you know, mend these relationships with people in a way that I don't think I would have been able to do had I not, you know, mm-hmm. used cannabis. It allows mm-hmm. me to.
And any downside, any side effects? You mentioned the other drugs you were given having side effects. What about marijuana?
The side effects, I mean, the worst side effect that I've seen is, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's the munchies. You do get hungry, and, you know, that's not maybe the greatest side effect to have, but that's really been the worst side effect I've encountered. I mean, it does make me sleepy if I use, you know, too much of it, but not any further than, you know, something like narcotic painkillers that have been prescribed to me. I mean, those impair me so much more and cause so much, you know, withdrawal effects and side effects associated with them. And I have none of those problems with cannabis. So if I miss a dose of cannabis, you know, it's not something that I need every day. It's not something I need every hour on the hour as I do with the prescription drugs. And I feel no withdrawal symptoms when I don't use it.
Logan Edwards is with us, an Iowa Marine Corps veteran from Davenport. He served in Iraq, a tour of duty in 2007 and 2008. As you just heard, has found relief from post-traumatic stress disorder in medical marijuana. That's the topic of our program today. 20 states have legalized medical marijuana. Should Iowa do the same? Join our conversation. Perhaps you have a personal story, a personal medical condition that you've used marijuana for. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Logan Edwards, please stay with us. We'll get back to you in just a moment because we want to learn now from Rachel Selmeski, is a native Iowan joining us by phone. And Rachel, hi, are you there?
Yes.
Hi. You are a native Iowan. Where are we reaching you today?
We're actually in Colorado, in Denver.
Okay. And you are the mother of a 17-year-old baby, a daughter, Maggie?
She's actually 17. 18 months old.
Month old. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But anyway, you're out in Colorado, and actually you're in Colorado because Colorado's laws are different and allow you to treat your baby with mm-hmm. with cannabis. How? What is the condition, first of all? I guess we'd better start there.
At 6 weeks old, she began having full tonic clonic or grand mal seizures, and we went through a host of hospital stays, numerous anticonvulsants, IV therapies that wouldn't work, and then we thought we were doing something called manual therapy. We thought we were seeing some good progress, which I think her body was, but then she developed what's called infantile spasms, which are real brief spasms, basically a generalized seizure. And between that and mild clonic jerks, which are another form of seizures, she has over 500 a day.
What does it look like when we observe her face and she has a seizure?
So with the infantile spasms, she it looks like a startle response, and her eyes kind of do a really quick roll, and then it's very brief. But every time, it's her brain basically short-circuiting and completely stunts growth development. Mm-hmm. And actually, she's even, I mean, we didn't have much progress that we were able to make, but she's actually even regressed since this spasm started as well. So she's 18 months old, and she's at about a 3 to 4 month old neurodevelopental age.
Before, we want to talk about treatment with cannabis in just a moment. Before that treatment, what sort of treatment did she get from, let's say, conventional medicine?
She's gone through 6 different anticonvulsants. At one point, actually this time last year, she was on 4 at once. And they're all sedating medicine. So they're trying to slow the seizure activity down, but obviously not effective. But it's also slowing all the rest of her systems down. So right now she's on 3 anticonvulsants still. I nearly had to sign my life away that she would lose her vision. And then just the side effects are, the lists are exhaustive of the damage that can be caused by these anticonvulsants.
Mm-hmm. So you have tried, you're out in Colorado where mm-hmm. Cannabis, marijuana is now legal, and there's a certain type of oil treatment you've been using for Maggie. Tell mm-hmm. us about that.
So there's a specific strain that has only been around for a little while, but it's extremely high in CBD and low in THC.
And the THC, just to be clear, the THC is what makes people high, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's what people look for with the psychoactive effect. And actually, in the recreational realm, people are trying to grow it higher and higher for higher THC. The oil Maggie's getting is very low in THC and high in the CBD. And I know people have presented me with synthetic forms, but actually the whole plant is very beneficial. The THC can be sometimes the redheaded stepchild for that, but really it has purpose, appetite stimulant and pain reducer and things like that. That still is a vital component and compound of her actual oil. But what she, it's the plant materials extracted, and where we get it from is all organically grown. It's tested in the plant form for solvents, pesticides, mold, And then it's also tested in the oil form for those things. And then we have a printout of the levels of the different cannabinoids in her oil. And we give it to her through an oral syringe, just like we do with all the rest of her medicines.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's just like a medicine, like an oil she's drinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What difference has it made? You've been at it for just a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks, mm-hmm. something like that?
Yep, she's been on it for about 2.5 weeks right now. And we intentionally started very low and are going very, very slow with her. There's a delicate balance of trying to wean her off her other anticonvulsants. And so one of the side effects initially is that it can magnify some of the other anticonvulsants. So trying to get those out of her system will actually prove to be more beneficial. Mm-hmm. But right off the bat, just her alertness, her awareness of her surroundings, and we're talking about an 18-month-old that can't hold her head up and can't see very well and doesn't necessarily know where she's at.
What about the seizures? Have they lessened in intensity or in number?
At this point, we don't notice a direct correlation with them lessening, but there's a holistic effect of letting it build up in her body as well. One thing we have seen is, just like Logan said, is she definitely has the munchies. Her appetite has increased, and not that it's majorly newsworthy, but her elimination is tremendous, and anyone that knows dealing with sedative medicines, that the digestive system slows everything down, and once you do that, you just become toxic, and so that is a battle we deal with constantly, and the fact that she's going to the bathroom every day is a huge success in our department.
Rachel Selmeski is with us, a native Iowan, mother of a 17-month-old baby with epilepsy, a severe form of epilepsy, and is living now in Colorado. I want you to stay with us, Rachel, but answer mm-hmm. this briefly. Are you in Colorado? I mean, if Iowa's laws were different in terms of medical uses of cannabis, would you be living here with your family?
We would definitely reassess where we're at. We live each day seeing what each day holds, and so when that becomes available, that is definitely an option. So definitely.
Okay.
The other thing is visiting family. I mean, at this point, we can't leave the state of Colorado, so Maggie's relationship with her family is very
It would be
limited.
Illegal for you to have possessed that oil in Iowa?
The minute we cross over the state lines of Colorado, we become criminals. It's a Schedule I substance, and then it's child abuse on top of that we are giving it to our child.
Okay. Joining us now, Dr. Stephen Jennison. He's an Iowa native and a graduate of the University of Iowa College of Medicine. Dr. Jennison, welcome.
Glad to be here.
And let me point out that you're the first director of New Mexico's medical cannabis program. Tell us, you were back in Iowa to do some other medical training, but you're also here speaking out on behalf of using cannabis medicinally. You'll be discussing this Monday, December 2nd, at a Des Moines Public Library gathering at 6 p.m. in the evening. What is the message you want to deliver here in the state as a physician?
Well, I think that every state needs to deal with the issue of whether or not they're going to establish a medical cannabis program for those people who might benefit from its use. Every state goes about it differently. I think there are some parallels between New Mexico and Iowa that the New Mexico experience can inform the discussions that will go on here. Most of those discussions took place in New Mexico between 2000 and 2007 when medical cannabis bills were being considered by the New Mexico legislature.
What parallels exactly do you see?
Well, first of all, we don't have a citizens' initiative process in the state of New Mexico, so it was necessary in order to establish a medical cannabis program to do it through the legislative process, and it's my understanding that the same is true in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. What is your reaction to the two personal stories that we saw there, Logan Edwards? We heard also from Rachel about her baby. Give us the length and breadth of where you see as a medical doctor cannabis being used thus far? Because there is a lot of research that needs to be done, isn't there?
The stories that I've heard today are very similar to a lot of the stories that I heard over the period of time that the medical cannabis bill in New Mexico was being heard, as well as the stories that I heard when I was the first medical director of the program in New Mexico, where it was my authority and responsibility to sign off on applications that were made for enrollment in our program. Almost without exception, all of the stories that I heard were people who suffered from severe debilitating illnesses, who had sought treatment through conventional medicines and had not received relief, had tried cannabis or were anticipating trying cannabis because other people had suggested it to them, and found that they derived relief where nothing else had brought them relief before. Mm-hmm. So when I was first assigned this by the Department of Health, I was a little nervous about it because I didn't really know what I thought about it and hadn't had a lot of experience talking to people. But the more stories that I heard, the more I became convinced that the great, great majority of individuals who were interested in having access were very sincere in their desire to
stories. But is there medical evidence, research evidence, to back up the stories, the anecdotes you're hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. Even at the time when New Mexico was considering its bill between 2000 and 2007, there was a review of the available research that was done by the Institute of Medicine, where they looked at the available research and found that there were certainly some conditions for which there was already adequate evidence. One was people with cancer undergoing chemotherapy, controlling their nausea and vomiting, people with HIV and AIDS in terms of their peripheral neuropathy and their anorexia, their lack of appetite, people with multiple sclerosis. So there was already a lot of evidence, but the body of evidence has grown substantially since then.
Dr. Stephen Jennison is with us, and before we take our break, we've got a minute or so left. I want to introduce another physician we have on our program. Dr. Dan Gillette is with us by phone, a psychiatrist from Sioux City. Dr. Gillette, welcome.
Thank you.
And we want to, of course, have you on for the entire rest of the hour, but in the minute before the break, let me ask you, do you think that cannabis has legitimate medical uses?
Well, as just mentioned, there is research showing that it is effective for a couple of conditions, with the use as an anti-nausea agent and cancer chemotherapy being the oldest of those to be researched. In my view, the real issue is that in every state I'm familiar with, the creation of a program for medical cannabis consisted of using the political process to replace a requirement for medical research demonstrating safety and efficacy. And that's where I have concern.
Okay, so that we get the experts out of there and you the political process. Steve Jennison, with your experience in New Mexico, a quick reply to that?
Well, I would say that medical cannabis programs in states are really a response to the fact that even though medical cannabis has a lot of potential, that research that should be done has been largely obstructed.
Okay, we'll be back as we discuss medical marijuana this hour on River to River. Dr. Steve Jennison was with us, Dr. Dan Gillette, and also Logan Edwards and Rachel Selmeski. Join our conversation. Do you think Iowa should join 20 other states in legalizing medical marijuana? Does cannabis help a medical condition you have? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Back in just a moment. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, talking about medical marijuana this hour. Illinois, our neighbor state, became the 20th state to legalize medical marijuana this past year. Actually, doctors can start prescribing medical marijuana in Illinois beginning in January, and some in Iowa are pushing for a similar change in our state law, so we're getting various perspectives on that today. Logan Edwards with us, an Iowa Marine Corps veteran from Davenport, who has found that he can effectively treat his PTSD, his post-traumatic stress disorder, with it. All other conventional medicines, also with a lot of side effects, seem to have failed in that case. Rachel Salmeski is with us, a native Iowa, now in Colorado, treating her 17-month-old baby who has some severe form of epilepsy now with some cannabis oils that are available in Colorado that are illegal in other states, most other states, I guess I should say. Dr. Stephen Jennison with us, an Iowa native, the first director of the New Mexico Medical Cannabis Program, telling us how that state's program works. And also Dr. Dan Gillette, a psychiatrist from Sioux City. We left off and gave Dr. Gillette very little time. We want to get to our callers as well. We're asking for people who have firsthand experience helping a medical condition with cannabis, 1-866-780-9100. We want to get to those as soon as possible. But Dr. Gillette, list your biggest concerns in changing Iowa's laws, specifically just to limit the use of cannabis where prescribed by a doctor.
Okay. Yeah, you know, the big concern is going around the normal process to demonstrate safety and efficacy of any medication before it goes on the market. And my longtime experience has been that when politicians get involved in the delivery of medical care, that does not lead to medical care improving generally. But my concern with
On that point, before you go on, wasn't it back in 2010 that the Iowa Board of Pharmacy voted 6-0 to propose the legislation that would reclassify marijuana, make it possible to legalize the drug for medical purposes? Now, the Iowa Board of Pharmacy, a lot of medical expertise there, yet the that was including experts, and the legislature chose to ignore it.
Yeah, well, as Dr. Jennison mentioned, one of the problems is that because of how marijuana is classified at the federal level, it's hard to do the research that would prove that it's safe and effective. And my feeling is that the appropriate response is to apply political pressure so that that research can be done, not to use political pressure to do away with the need for doing such research. Some of the things that we do know about marijuana, of course, it's intoxicating, and through history, there have been tendencies for things that are intoxicating to be considered medicinal at some point, and that has, you know, certainly people got prescriptions for whiskey during Prohibition and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So you see it as increasing the chances for abuse, possibly as a gateway drug, especially when we think of the youth of our state and our country?
Potentially so. My biggest concern is the effect of the marijuana itself. There have been a couple of studies that I think are important. One was done in the last couple of years, and it was on driving, using driving simulators. An older study was done on flying a computer-simulated airplane. And I'd like to briefly summarize what they found. The two studies found the same thing. But the airplane study, what they did was they took college students who tested negative for drugs and alcohol, hadn't used anything for a while, taught them to fly a computer-simulated airplane, and they learned to land the aircraft. Then they had them smoke marijuana. The amount was about the equivalent of two joints, so they were stoned, and surprise, surprise, stoned people can't land airplanes. They kept these students in the lab overnight. Nobody was using anything, and the next day, nobody was stoned anymore either. 24 hours later, none of them could land the aircraft. So they kept them in the lab another 24 hours. Nobody was using anything. They were just, you know, watching TV or doing homework. Came back 48 hours later. No one could land the airplane. It was 72 hours before any of them could land the airplane again. The driving study similarly found that people were clearly impaired for 72 hours, meaning it was clearing up 72 hours out. Now, that's after using marijuana once.
Okay. Let's have Dr. Jennison reply, please, briefly to that, and we want to add a couple other people to our conversation. Dr. Jennison, what do you have to say to that?
Yeah, I don't think that anyone who's using medical cannabis for any reason should necessarily be flying airplanes. I think that people who use medical cannabis tend to have very severe chronic debilitating conditions for which they're using a lot of other drugs that also have profound effects, including opioids and benzodiazepines, drugs that are licensed, drugs that we prescribe to people on a very regular basis for the same sorts of debilitating conditions.
Also joining our conversation, State Senator Joe Bolcom is with us, a Democrat from District 43, and Steve Lucan, Iowa's Drug Control Policy Coordinator, Director of the Iowa Office of Drug Control Policy. You're proposing the change, Senator Bolcom. What proposal do you want to make? And then we'll have Steve Lucan respond to that.
Well, thanks, Ben. I would start with the notion that cannabis reduces suffering for patients that have debilitating conditions where all other medicines and conventional approaches have failed. And I think it's time that we put in place a system that's safe, provides legal access with adequate controls to address the needs of thousands of Iowans, some of whom are leaving the state and some of whom we've driven out in the streets to conduct their own illegal cannabis buys. I think it's time for an adult conversation here in Iowa about how we meet the needs of those folks. The New Mexico model, I think, gives us some guidance in terms of a possible model that I believe has the kind of strict controls that Iowans would like to see.
Steve Lucan, respond to that. Are you still in favor of keeping marijuana Schedule 1 classification in the state?
I think my big concern actually today as I listen to some of the conversations going on here and also across the country is that there are a small amount of people who have some very true medical problems and conditions, and they are actually in some ways I think being used by people who are trying to create a new addiction industry out there with the whole legalization effort. And that's where one of my concerns is trying to actually find some way to help some very targeted people. Mm-hmm. You talk about the New Mexico program and the Colorado program, and I would encourage people to actually dig into some of the details and find out what's happening on the ground there. Some of the names of the medical cannabis in New Mexico I just find really interesting. Agent Orange, AK-47, Green Crack. I mean, are we actually using something? What I'm concerned about, I think, is that in some of these states – These programs have started out with good intentions, and they have gotten out of hand, and they have actually become a way for people to make profit on addictions.
Okay. You're the first director of New Mexico's medical cannabis program, Steve Jennison. How do you deal with those charges?
I would say, first of all, that all of the medical cannabis producers in the state of New Mexico are not-for-profit organizations. They are required to be by New Mexico law. So I don't think that there's really anyone making a lot of profit. They all have to be New Mexico not-for-profit companies. I would say that the strains are named after strains that have been developed over very long periods of time and that the producers have just chosen to continue to use the names that of the strains that they're growing.
Mm-hmm. You say you it sounds like you want to create a law, Steve Lucan, or would be in favor of creating a law that could accommodate the people with justifiable needs here, justifiable medical needs. Do you see a way of doing that?
Well, I think to Dr. Gillette's point earlier, I think we need to work with some of the programs that are there today to help a very targeted number of people. There is something called the Innovative New Drug System, which you can actually work with a doctor to work with the FDA, to work with the DEA, to access some drugs that are currently being worked through the FDA approval process. There are drugs such as Epidiolex and Sativex that are working their way through the FDA approval process to be administered in a safe environment and a controlled environment. And I think there are some ways to do that. You look at some of these other states, New Mexico, for example, people who are in hospice care that are currently getting the medical cannabis, at least in a recent survey, was 16 people. Yet there was over close to 3,000 people who simply claimed chronic pain. I think that's one of our big concerns is actually trying to find a way, and I think there are existing routes today, making mm-hmm. sure that we work through the FDA and the DEA in a safe way to help some of these people in very, very rare instances get access to some experimentative treatments without opening up a program that really in many states has kind of become a joke. I mean, okay. You look at Colorado – for example, where today you actually have more medical marijuana dispensaries in towns like Denver than you do Starbucks.
Okay, we want to go back to our phones, but Senator Joe Bolcom, respond to that criticism that the legitimate use is really only the thin end of the wedge, and the bulk of it is disguised recreational use, if we can say that.
Well, I think Mr. Lucan has a hard job. Let's just start there. And I'm actually hearing some agreement that he believes that cannabis and the properties of cannabis have some value for these chronically sick people. But he has a hard job. He has to represent a governor who is opposed to helping these Iowans. I'd like us to rely on medical experts, science, and frankly, the stories from many of these Iowans that I've heard from and the stories we've heard today on your show, Ben, that have experienced significant health benefits, pain reduction, improved quality of life from using cannabis as a medicine.
Okay, let's go back to our callers. We have a good number of them. Just to hear briefly, if we could, these are people we've been asking for people who have had found some help in cannabis because of a medical condition. Sally in West Des Moines. Hi, Sally.
Hi.
Yes, you have used what is your position on using medicinal uses of cannabis?
Well, we have not had access to medical cannabis yet, and I am very eager to try it. We have a 23-year-old daughter with Dravet syndrome, a very rare and catastrophic form of epilepsy, and she's currently on four anti-epileptic seizure meds, has more than one seizure a week, and one of her meds we import under the compassionate use from France. All of these meds have terrible side effects. She functions at a 4 to 5 year old level, and there are many young patients with Dravet syndrome getting help from cannabis. It is not addicting. It is a medicine. It has none of these children and my daughter will ever drive a car or fly an airplane. They just need help from their seizures.
Sally, thank you for your view from West Des Moines. Let's go to Larry in Cedar Falls. Hi, Larry.
Hello.
Yes, Larry, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Larry. Go ahead. We can hear you just fine.
All right. I have a spinal cord injury, and I've been 32 years with spinal cord injury, and for most of that time, I've been able to manage spasms and pain, but in the last few years, I've had some real bad pain. I've been prescribed narcotics and anti-epileptic drugs and other kinds of muscle relaxers, and the side effects from that are so bad that I ended up trying about 3 years ago marijuana and found that it really worked much better than anything else. So I would be pro medical marijuana in Iowa.
Okay, Larry, thank you. In Cedar Falls, what are the Joe Bolcom? I'm sure you have your fingers on the pulse of this. What are the polls in Iowa nationwide say about medical uses of marijuana? Or Steve Jennison?
Yeah.
Or Doc?
Well, there's been a Des Moines Register poll. This is a couple years old. I think it's had 63% of Iowans in support of pursuing a medical cannabis program. And I think around the country, the polling is actually somewhat better than that and improving all the time. The citizens would like would like an opportunity to have this medicine.
Okay. Senator Bolcom, tell us exactly what you have in store for the next session. What do you want to introduce? What do you want to change? And we want to get Steve Lucan's response to that.
Well, Steve will recognize as a former legislator himself that the legislative process takes time and it takes citizen involvement connecting with their legislators, and that's really the process we're in now. Two bills will be reintroduced in 2014, one that will reschedule marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, basically saying it has medical benefits. The other will provide an outline of the New Mexico program, the other piece of legislation. That'll be really a beginning point for legislators here in Iowa and interested parties to get together and start talking about what an Iowa approach would look like. The states are where innovation occurs. You've got 20 models to choose from in terms of what's going on around the country. I've looked at the New Mexico program. Dr. Jennison will talk about it next Monday night at the Des Moines Public Library at 6 o'clock for people who are interested. But
Those two bills will be introduced, and hopefully we'll have some conversation about it. I'm under no illusions, though. I think we're still a couple years away, frankly, from moving this along.
So you see what has to happen is awareness or further research? What has to happen? Why do you say 2 years away?
Well, I think more people need to hear Logan Edwards' story and Rachel Simelski's story and other stories to move this issue along. There's people in our state suffering today needlessly and would like us to make progress on this. I'd like to say we're going to make progress sooner, but we're still in an education mode, and people need to reach – if they care about this, they need to reach out to their legislators and talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Steve Lucan, director of the Iowa Office of Drug Control Policy. What sort of common ground do you see in the immediate future in terms of changing laws to allow some sort of medical marijuana? Where do you see the most likely opportunity for change, if there would be one?
Well, you know, I think also I want to compliment Senator Bolcom, because I think, like many people, he has compassion for people who are suffering. And I think every Iowan doesn't like to see suffering needlessly. Nobody's in favor of that. Nobody's in favor of grandma who's on her deathbed, you know, suffering needlessly. Nobody wants that. I think where there is some potential common ground is in that. We both want to help people find relief, find medically safe ways, ways that have, you know, have gone through rigorous testing and standards, and ways that don't lead to further addiction and don't lead to further bleeding of marijuana into youth population. That's some of our concerns, you know, with other states. You have seen actually every state where you have seen a medical marijuana program or a program of legalization happen, you have actually seen higher rates of usage amongst youth, which in our opinion is a very bad step. It leads to a lot of other unintended consequences.
We want to have a response to that in just a moment, but tell me, the question was, where do you see the common ground? Even if it's a small bit of common ground, where do you see that? Where do you see the governor, for instance, most likely agreeing to on a limited basis to use medical marijuana in the state?
Well, I think the governor would support individuals who are able to apply for the innovative new drug program, who are able to work with a doctor in Iowa to use an experimental drug through the DEA process with FDA, you know, something that's going through the FDA approval. I think that's an area where we could certainly see some agreement.
Dr. Jennison?
Yeah, I would say that for investigational new drugs before, which I assume is what you mean, for investigational new drugs, I think that before you put that out to the public as a possible alternative, you really need to look into what that looks like, how difficult it is for someone to actually get enrolled in those programs, how difficult it is for a medical provider to be an investigator under that before you propose that that's an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Steve Lucan?
Well, you know, again, I think the big concern is making sure that these drugs don't get out into the hands of youth. We have seen that happen in many other states where there is a program, and that's really a cause of concern. It is a very serious drug in many cases. We actually have over 60% of the youth who are in drug treatment here in Iowa mm-hmm. are in drug treatment for marijuana. So we want to make sure that we are keeping that in a very tightly controlled program, and I think the investigational new drug is one that does that. You know, and again, we want to make sure that these are actually things that have the potential to help people without simply being an avenue for people to feed addictions.
Senator Bolcom.
Well, Mr. Lucan continues to say in the press that we've seen the increase in youth use of medical marijuana, and that's not true. And so I just want to correct the record on that. The CDC actually does a national and state youth risky behavior survey, and there's a recent study from 1993 through 2011 covering all 16 states with legalized medical cannabis. And the study results indicate that legalization of medical marijuana has not been accompanied by an increase in the use of marijuana or other substances by high schoolers. So I think we want to have a discussion about this. We should be as factual as possible.
Okay, Dr. Dan Gillette, we haven't heard from you for several minutes. You've been listening to this, our psychiatrist from Sioux City. What do you need to know to have the law changed in whatever limited way?
Well, changing the category from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 would allow research, appropriate research, to be done. My bottom line is it shouldn't be treated any differently than any other putative new medication. You need to prove that it's safe. You need to prove that it's effective. You need to determine what level of control there should be over its dispensing. I think it's a mistake to create a political structure to replace the medical structure that's used for all other medications.
Okay. And Dr. Jennison, we have 30 seconds left. What do you see as the first step that Iowa is likely to take here?
Well, I think that every state has to find its own path in regard to a medical cannabis program, and you now have the advantage of examining about 20 different models. I would say that the more stringent your program, the more that it accomplishes what it is that you seek to do, which is to provide compassionate use of cannabis to people who are suffering from severe debilitating illnesses.
Dr. Steve Jennison, Dr. Dan Gillette, thank you for joining us, along with Logan Edwards and Rachel Selmeski, Steve Lucan, and Senator Joe Bolcom. Thank you all for joining us, as well as those who called. We couldn't get everybody on the line. Sorry, we couldn't get to all your input, but we'll certainly follow up. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. It's produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Help from Clay Masters today. Thanks for joining us.